Welcome into another edition of The Session with Lana and David. My name's David Austin, and I have a little bit of an allergy thing happening today. They tented the building that we're in a couple weeks ago to kill all of the varmints, and I think I'm breathing fumes in that are not good for me. Sitting across from me, however, super dialed in today, a girl who's practically back from the dead.
Yes.
Londa Sherwood Austin.
Hello.
How are you?
I feel so good. You know when you've been sick?
Yes.
So sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come back from it and you feel like you have a new lease on life.
That's you.
That is how I feel right now. Coming back from the vid.
I like it.
I wanted to die 1,000 deaths, and I would not wish that on my worst enemy.
I'm shocked that I did not sing to you ever. My corona. I'm shocked that I didn't sing that to
you.
I
am too, except that there was like no room for any humor at all because it was so, so terrible.
It was a dark time at the Austin house. A dark, dark time.
Yeah, that lasted a full 2.5 weeks. And then all of a sudden, one day I woke up and I felt almost normal.
And you didn't remember how it felt to feel that way, right?
Right.
It was brand new.
Brand new. So we're back.
Yay, we're back. Yeah.
And I'm excited. I'm fired up about a lot of things. I'm fresh off a coaching call with a client, and so yes. I'm all jazzed up right now.
I like that. I like that a lot, and I want to capitalize on it. Last week's episode, that's very hot, by the way. Last week's episode was a good one because it talked about mistakes that salespeople make.
Well, one mistake in particular.
That lead to middling careers, and that mistake is not asking for the business.
Right. And I apologize to anyone who watches the YouTube video from last week because I thought I was feeling better. And in retrospect, looking at the video, I looked like hell.
No, you looked super hot. You're beautiful.
Oh my God.
Shut your dirty mouth.
I was still so sick. But anyway, the important part.
You looked like you were a little under the weather. But you are beautiful and you looked great.
The important part is that the content was amazing.
It really was. Mm. And that brings us to this week's topic. As you know, The Session with Londa and David is all about improving your business.
Yes, it's a fun, informative podcast for business owners.
Yes. With that said, we're going to look a little bit into what motivates people.
Yes.
Motivation in sales is critical because if you don't feel like making the calls, if you don't feel like putting in the work, if you don't feel like doing it, you're not going to do it. And that is not acceptable if you've got to feed your family. So let's get right into it.
Okay.
There are several different types of motivation.
Yeah.
And you and I talked about them briefly before the show.
Yeah. I actually made notes for today's show.
I'm very excited about it.
Very rare. And I brought my glasses just in case I can't see them. But everything's going pretty well so far.
You look great, but you don't see well.
I don't see. some of this I think has been brought up because I've been talking with one of the business owners that we consult with, and they're talking to me about, you know, the employees that they have and wanting the employees to stay motivated.
Right.
And, you know, an employer or a team leader like of a sales team or a owner can motivate to a certain degree.
Yes.
But if you have to constantly, I learned this a long time ago. This was a phrase that I heard, I don't know, probably 20 years ago in some training somewhere. If you have to constantly pump up their tires and put out their fires,
yes,
get rid of them, replace them.
Okay.
Because somebody who's got no personal motivation, like they just can't seem to get their shit together to be motivated for anything.
Right.
They need to just go get an hourly job somewhere.
Selling shoes at Walmart in the shoe department.
Maybe. doing something that doesn't require motivation, somewhere where they can clock in and clock out and do their job and do it well, and they can leave it all there and they don't have to think about it again. And those people, those employees, and those jobs are very necessary.
And I want to.
There's nothing wrong with that,
right? I want to point that out, that there is absolutely nothing wrong.
Oh, yeah.
With having that as your mindset.
Yep.
And there are certain sales positions, like inside sales, that that's okay.
Sure.
To be an okay customer service provider works in many, many, many organizations. It doesn't work in most commission sales positions,
well,
however.
It doesn't work if you make commissions to put food on the table.
Right. That's right.
You know, it's just not going to work. So so I would say if you're a person who really struggles to be motivated, then a full-time commissioned sales position is probably not for you.
Right.
Let it go, move on, and be free to go do something else.
I like that.
Easy peasy.
Okay, so let's talk about some types of personal motivation.
Okay, so one thing I want to talk about is motivation is not hype.
Okay.
Those are different things. Hype is something that happens at the BDS. You know,
I don't know what a BDS is.
The big damn show.
I thought it was some kind of Bible show.
No, no.
I know VBS is Vacation Bible School. No,
the big damn show. A lot of companies have an annual celebration, an annual rah-rah sis-boom-ba.
Yes.
I call it the BDS. It's the big damn show. Mm-hmm. And those are designed to resell you on the company.
I gotcha.
That's really the purpose of those once a year gatherings for corporations, is to resell the people who are in it on the company.
Yes.
They dress it up in a lot of other things.
Yes.
But that's really what it is, hey, remember how great this company is?
Right. Yeah. We're going to give you a sense of ownership, and we're going to make you feel like this is your team.
Right.
The company that has put on the best big damn show, as you call it, that I've ever been to, Guild Mortgage. I mean, every year they put on a spectacular sales event, and I always left there feeling motivated. I'm an easy mark. Because I'm pretty simple. So when you do a hype-based show, love it.
Right.
One year, they had a guy from American Ninja Warrior come and climb all over the auditorium. Another year, Lin-Manuel Miranda came walking down the aisle rapping a song. I mean, they put on a show at Guild, and I love it.
I don't want to burst your bubble, but all the companies put on a show that's amazing. I mean, I've been to a lot of different ones. They're all good.
Yes.
They all have their place, and mostly their place is to secure the people that are already in the company.
And that, you know what? There's something to be said for that.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that.
When you leave an event like that, you can be super motivated if you're simple like me.
Well, it's not that. It's typically you're motivated for a short time. And that's why I say it's hype, it's not motivation.
Okay, let's get deeper into that.
Motivation,
tell me more about
is
that.
Something that doesn't really wane.
I gotcha.
When you have real motivation, it there's an ebb and flow to it, but it doesn't disappear like hype does. And what will happen is people will come out of those conferences and excuse me. People will come out of those conferences and they might be super productive for a while.
Yes.
And then it'll taper off because they don't have that constant hype anymore.
Okay.
Which is also one reason why a lot of companies try to keep you connected into the hype somehow.
Yes.
Like through daily or weekly or monthly kind of rallies, or a lot of it is online stuff
like emails that are interactive and
lots of different things.
Yeah, yep.
But the bottom line is that motivation has to be something that you can find yourself.
Yes.
To be able to be successful. And it can be external motivation or it can be internal motivation.
Okay.
And let me kind of explain the difference there. External motivation could be that you have a family you have to support.
Okay.
right? And yes. Putting food on the table for your children can be a really powerful external motivator.
Absolutely.
Right?
Or knowing that your spouse is going to spend a big pile of money, so you better make it.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It sounds personal.
Well, you know.
Sorry, I have this little lingering cough from the vid.
That's okay. And I have something today,
yay,
which I really haven't coughed much during this show.
No, but we sound like a couple of diseased freaks.
I billboarded the heck out of it at the beginning of the show,
did,
though. Because
yeah, big warning.
Right before I turned on the microphone, I was like, it was crazy. So,
right. Anyway. So, external motivation can be a lot of different things. You've got, you know, a big pile of bills to pay.
Sure.
You know, can't pay your bills. Great. Pick up the phone.
That's exactly right. I'll never forget when Les Savage, when I called Les and told him I paid off my car, he goes, "Ooh, then you need a boat."
Yeah.
Because he wanted me to be focused.
Right, right. And motivation can also be internal.
Yes.
Where there's just something that clicks inside you. And you know that you have to make this happen. And for me, a lot of times motivation has been internal. Like when I started real estate 5 years ago, and I knew that if I didn't succeed at this, my financial picture was never going to recover. And I was at a place in my life where my finances had been devastated.
How'd that happen? It's okay to talk about this.
Well, I had a partner at the time who spent money and hid the fact that money was being spent. And I wasn't involved in the finances at all.
Okay.
Because I was primarily a stay-at-home mom. I always had a side hustle, but it was like for extra cash, right? It wasn't, oftentimes didn't even go into the bank account.
I gotcha.
And so I had no idea what my financial picture was, and that's on me. That's my fault. But lying about money and hiding debt was my partner's fault. So that's where I was. And at some point I decided, I had started a business and it was pretty successful in my opinion at the time. And it seemed like no matter how much money I made, it was never enough. Like we were always behind.
I can fully relate to what you just said about always feeling behind.
Yeah. And so one day I got on the computer and I was like, I wonder why no matter how much money I make, it's never enough to get ahead. What's going on with the money?
And so what was going on with the money?
Well, I had a lot of debt that I didn't know about.
Oh, okay.
Like over $100,000.
Of debt?
Of consumer debt that I did not know about.
Consumer debt, not like cars and houses, but like credit cards. Okay.
Yep.
That's expensive.
And it was shocking to me.
So did you take out a second on the house? Is that how you took care of it? What'd you do?
No, I started making more money. I got involved right away. I said, there's no more secrets. Nothing more is going to be hidden here. And I started reducing the expenses.
Right.
And increasing the income, which is what you do.
And
one of the things I did that was this was pivotal. And I want to encourage people to do this if you're in a similar position. Because I think there's a lot of Me Toos here. Like a lot of people can relate to being under it and not knowing what to do.
Okay.
We sold our house. And that was a really big deal. We downsized the house and we had a huge house. It was 4,200 square foot, three level with a full apartment basement.
I financed that house.
Yeah.
I know that house.
On 3 acres with a 5-bay shop. Like it was my dream house at the time, right?
You bought that house 11 years ago.
I did.
You moved in 11 years and 2 months ago.
It closed 11 years ago, a couple days ago.
Yeah, that's cool.
So sold the house.
Yeah.
And that would get us out from under a huge amount of debt.
Okay.
That, you know, wasn't the consumer debt, but at least it would reduce the house payment. So, and then moved into a very small 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,500 square foot house with
dramatically less expense.
Five kids still at home, but the expense of it was dramatically less, because one thing people don't understand about purchasing a home is your payment. If you upsize in your house,
yes,
they get that their payment's going to be bigger. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that everything else is going to be more expensive too.
Right. Utilities are going to be more expensive.
Everything. If you're paying a third, again, higher amount in your payment, mm-hmm. you can damn sure guarantee every other expense that goes with the house is going to be at least a third higher as well.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those statistics bear out. And so it was just a huge reduction in the cost of...
selling that house, were you able to pay off other debts with the proceeds?
Yes. Or,
okay, good. Mm-hmm. So how much of the way did you get there by selling that house?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But I do remember that 7 years later, and of course that compelled me to start real estate.
Right. Yep.
Because not only did I have all this debt, but I also didn't have any retirement. I didn't have any savings. I didn't have any investments.
Scary.
And it scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And so that was some major internal motivation for me, was to pay off the debt and build, you know, something for the future.
Yes.
And 7 years later, all the debt was paid off and I had an investment property. And I had, you know, $30,000 in savings, which may not seem like a lot to a lot of people, but after paying off about $167,000 in debt, it was, you know, awesome to have $30,000 in savings.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's a success story.
Yeah, for sure.
Your motivation.
But during all that time.
Yes.
My motivation was mostly internal.
Right.
And it was also fear-based.
Yes.
Which, you know.
And fear-based motivation is legit. That's that's not a bad reason to get to work.
So motivation can be external or internal.
Yes.
It can also be positive or negative,
okay.
Which everything I just talked about was negative motivation.
But you had a positive outcome.
I did, but I was terrified the entire time. Oh. And in fact, that's when I started having panic attacks. Was over that whole situation. It was just a culmination of a lot of things in my life that kind of came together that were shit.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, my mom died, my dad died, the debt, the having to move, give up my beautiful house, you know, having to find a full-time career after being a primarily stay-at-home homeschool mom.
Right.
With a side hustle
right.
for 20 years.
Right.
Having to find a full-time career. I'm like, I remember sitting down trying to do my resume. And I'm like, I have a ton of marketable skills, but how do you translate that, you know,
yes.
to this? Like, because I couldn't figure out how to tell a potential employer that I had run my home like a business and I'd done it really, really well. How do you even do that? Which is partly why I went into real estate, because I didn't have to have a resume. I was
right.
like running my own ship, and I knew right. I could run my own ship.
All sales are that way, really. If you yeah. are focused and driven, it does not matter what your education level is,
right.
what your schooling is.
Yeah.
You just go do it. You
yeah.
know, you
yeah.
put your boots on and you go do it. And that's a really cool thing. And why I've been able to successfully be in sales for the last 20 some odd years,
right.
because I was made for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And we talked a little bit earlier about a lot of my motivation has been negative,
right.
internal, kind of fear-based motivation, which sounds terrible. But given my whole, you know, history, it actually makes sense. And now at this stage of my life, I use mortality motivation
right.
a lot. And that's just the idea that I'm going to die someday. And today is sooner than it was yesterday. And so what do I have to accomplish before
right.
I die?
Well, and I can tell you the mortality motivation that I had never even considered ever in my life until you and I started talking about it a couple of years ago on Badger Mountain.
Yeah.
That's why we're married today. Because you said to me, what would your life look like
yeah.
if you knew you were going to die in 2 years?
Yeah.
And I made my life look that way. That's why we got married. Because
so it worked.
It did. I didn't want to not be with you doing this.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And I had heard it. I had listened to a podcast that morning or the morning before, I think. And then I think it was the morning before I listened to a podcast while I was on the treadmill. And then we hiked the next morning. Mm-hmm. And I asked you that question because I'd heard it on the podcast. Like if you knew you only had, I think it was 3 years.
Okay.
You only had 3 years to live. What would be different about your life? And your initial answer to me was nothing.
Right.
And I remember being crushed because what I wanted you to say is I would leave everything and be with you. And I didn't even really know that's what I wanted you to say. I just know that when you said you wouldn't change anything, I was like, what are you talking about? You wouldn't change anything. Like, I'm right here.
Well, here's what I meant by nothing. I'm a generally happy person.
Right.
It's hard to make me feel sad. Mm-hmm. And I went through some really sad times after my divorce.
Yeah.
That time when I was hiking with you on Badger Mountain, not sad.
Right.
So that's why I said nothing.
Right.
Because I was
at that moment,
I was in my happy place at that moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Then I saw you naked and everything changed.
Oh my God. Well,
we got married.
It is
it's
what
okay.
It is. It
we,
is what it
we
is.
We weren't doing that when we were hiking. I don't want to.
No, you'd get scratches. But you said something interesting earlier this morning while we were discussing this, and you said for you, you have for most of your life been motivated by connection. Tell me more about that.
Well, I am most successful when I feel connected to other people, right?
What does that mean?
Well, I am a high touch person. The reason I went to go back to work with my friends, Dago, Miguel, and Rob, is because I have a deep connection with those boys. They all are family to me.
In case you're listening and you don't know them, none of them are boys. They're all grown men with families.
Well, they're younger than me, though. You know, they're sweet, sweet young men in my heart and in my brain.
Yes.
Rob looks like my little brother.
He kind of does, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dago and Miguel could literally be my children, and my high school girlfriend would have mothered children that look like that.
Okay.
So I feel very connected to those boys. Anyway,
tell me more about connection.
Yikes. The moral of the story is I am happy when I feel like I'm in some kind of familial unit. Mm. And that's how I feel with them. And I felt that way at Guild Mortgage because of Charles Ney and the other branches, all very close with all the branch managers and people like the girls in Moses Lake,
right?
The Spokane office,
right?
Some people on the west side felt really connected with them and was successful as a result.
Right.
After my divorce, I isolated myself a little bit and I kind of went into a personal slump.
Yeah, I get that.
And
you did that. What I did is I was hyper focused on work after my divorce.
Yes.
And had the best year of my career.
Yeah.
You know, as they say, what that means is I made more money than, you know, it was a ridiculous amount of money.
And what I did was I drank way too much and filled my bed with other women to fill a hole in my heart.
Right.
You know what I mean?
To try to feel connection somewhere because you'd lost a big connection.
That's right. So when I went to one of the Guild big damn shows, I listened to a speaker who talked about if you are alone in your business, you are 7 times more likely to not be successful than someone who's in business with partners and equals.
Interesting.
To feel that connection is critical for a lot of people. You're 7 times more likely to be successful if you have people that you can bounce ideas off of and feel a connection with.
I believe that's probably true in a lot of relationships, not just business. I'm thinking about a marriage even and having our partnership in our marriage, I feel like is very successful.
When I heard that speaker, I knew at that moment, and I wrote it in my notebook, call Dago and talk about partnering. During that speech, I wrote that down. And a month later, we went to Envoy.
Wow.
I joined them at Envoy. They were already there.
Right.
And the question
and
was...
that was... the
3 years ago?
Well, that was the beginning of 2019. Am I correct?
It could have been. Yes, February of 2019. Yes.
And it was like a month later we started working together.
That's right. Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
Talk about serendipitous. Well,
and let me tell you, I was thrilled at Guild. Thrilled with the people there.
And you're still close with those people.
Absolutely.
Everyone.
All the people I worked with and all the people I worked for, I'm still close to. You know, Charles Ney and I, you know, send messages back and forth on Facebook every couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, and all the managers and salespeople that I know.
Well, you're a very connected person.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Like you said, your motivation is connection. That doesn't surprise me at all because you can not see someone or not talk to someone for 10 years and you see them or connect in some way and you're right back there.
Absolutely. It's to me, it's weird when other people talk like that's a special skill because that's just, you know, how I am.
And you know, you really almost never let go of people.
That's true. That's
true. You want to stay connected with everyone you've ever known.
And a few people have been very disappointing and have disconnected from me. And those people, I just don't think about.
Yeah.
And there are very few. I can count on one hand how many there are.
Yeah.
Maybe two.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One or two.
And I'm very different that way.
Yeah, well, you know, I see no value in non-relationships.
Right.
So I want to have relationships with all the people I enjoy.
Yeah.
And you know what? If I can't be face to face with you, that doesn't mean that anything's going to change in the way I feel about you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there you go. And all of the women I dated, I think, ever, I'm still friendly with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So there you go. So I'm motivated by connection.
Right. And I'm motivated, generally speaking, it's an internal motivation and it is connected. A lot of people would say I'm motivated by money, but I'm not. And I saw something earlier today that I thought, man, this really sums it up. And I say something similar to this all the time. I say money doesn't buy happiness, but it does buy you options.
Yes.
And it's really nice to have options. And I saw something earlier that said, I wrote it down.
Do you want to wear your glasses? You might be able to see it better.
I'm not after the money. I'm after the freedom that comes with having money. And those are very different goals. I saw that earlier today on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was Joel Watson, the owner of Just Joel's in Kennewick, Washington.
Yes.
Best breakfast you'll ever have. He posted that. And that's so much my motivation is to have the freedom that comes with having money, which to me means choices and options.
I got you.
Because I can do, you know, whatever I want to do.
And having money is very different than making money.
For sure.
Because I, for 20 years, made great money, but had none.
Right.
Because it was all spent.
Right.
Right.
And neither one of us are spenders.
Correct. Although we have no problem with major purchases.
Yeah.
We woke up on a Wednesday and went and bought an RV. You know what I mean?
We did. Okay. We're a little crazy, but other than that, we don't really spend.
But our lifestyle is very inexpensive. Yeah. It's great that when we travel between the two homes, we're making money when we're there and we're making money when we're here. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's very cool to have a sustainable lifestyle that is successful and rewarding.
Yeah.
Right? So for me, at this point in my life right now, today, I am thrilled because I not only have business connections that I'm very motivated by with my partners at Envoy. I have deep emotional connections with you that make me very, very relaxed and they're very soothing to me.
Very peaceful, very satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say a lot less manic at this point in my life than I've ever been.
Yeah.
Because I'm not looking to fill a hole. I'm not looking to find something around the corner. I am at a place where I feel very content. And the best part is I'm good at work when I'm content.
Yeah.
I'm good right now in all of the aspects of my career because I'm content. The loan process is going super smoothly.
Now, that's really interesting.
The podcast business is going very well. The digital editing business is going very well. My consulting firm with you, going very well.
Yeah.
I mean, life is good because of that.
My real estate's going really well. I think that's interesting because one of the struggles that I have is when everything's going well, I really have to dig and find new motivation. And I think that's why I'm now kind of leaning into mortality motivation and like, okay, what are the things? Because we're in a place in life, our kids are all grown. We're watching our grandkids grow up. I mean, our oldest grandson's 8.
Right.
And, you know, we're just at that place in life that, okay, now what, you know, I'm in the second half.
Right.
Maybe even the last quarter. I don't know. But, and what do I have to accomplish before I'm done here? And so that's become a lot of my motivation. And I want to give one tip to people about how do you find your motivation.
Okay.
If they're struggling to find it. And one exercise that I use with clients a lot is called the rings of motivation or bullseye motivation.
Okay.
And really all it is you can, you know, you take a piece of paper and you draw a bullseye with several, you know, circles and you start in the outside circles and you start writing the things that you think motivate you.
Okay.
Right. And you just keep going and keep going, getting further and further inside the bullseye. And I always say, if you write down, and you, it doesn't have to be in a bullseye, you can make a list. It doesn't really matter. It's just a great exercise to do like at a workshop, the bullseye thing. The closer you get to the center, the closer you're going to get to your unwavering motivation.
Okay.
And that unwavering motivation is the thing that you're after. And oftentimes, and I always say to people, if you write down 50 reasons why you have to succeed at this, whatever this is, fill in the blank, it could be anything.
Right.
By the time you get to number 50, or about 45, you're going to really start getting underneath the stuff and really start getting to what actually motivates. Because, I learned this from a health coach actually, because they said people come to them and they want to lose weight, but finding the motivation to lose weight is underneath a whole bunch of other reasons they give.
Interesting.
And so that's where I first learned this. And you know, well, I want to be healthy. You know, I want to be healthier, and so I want to lose weight. And that's almost never the actual motivation. And so you just dig a little deeper and dig a little deeper. And I mean, I've done this with businesses. I've done it with homeschool moms because I homeschooled for 24 years and people were like, what was your motivation? And I can tell you right now, today, still, you know, 28 years later, exactly what my motivation was the day I started and what it was the day that I finished. And it never wavered.
Was it?
It was that I wanted my kids to know who they were, like have a central, like deep knowledge of who they are.
Yes.
And what's possible
for them. Okay.
I wanted that foundation in them before they went out and everyone else in the world told them who they are and what they can do.
My mother would have loved you so, so much because she always said to me, I want you to know that you are awesome.
Right.
And I want you to know that you can do whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I believed her.
Yeah.
And I it's been great. Thank you. Yay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like I say to Dago, we are forces of nature.
Yeah, you do say that all the time.
And we are.
In fact, I said to him one time when he was having trouble getting one of your deals done, and we happened to be in the office, and I said, wait a minute, doggo, I thought you were a force of nature. Anyway, I think that making those lists or doing that bullseye exercise is really important. And I have never had a client, I think this is true, I've never had a client that I can remember that when we did that exercise, mm-hmm. when they hit their unwavering motivation and vocalized it,
yes,
they cry.
Interesting.
Every single time.
Okay.
There is some kind of physical reaction every single time. So if you're making your list or you're doing your bullseye and you hit on something that you have some kind of physical reaction to, it probably is the thing.
It is that.
It's the thing. At least it's the thing for right now.
Yeah.
Because motivation can change. Mm-hmm. But you know, motivation is, it's not something that somebody else can do for you.
Right.
It's not something that someone else should do for you.
Yes.
Get your damn self motivated.
Okay.
No, you know, it reminds me of when I was giving birth to my last child, who was huge. He was 10 and a half pounds. It was
he's still huge.
He is. He's 6'5". But he was 10 and a half pounds. Of course, I didn't know that at the time. But I knew he was big. And
spoke Russian.
It was a home birth, you know. So I'm birthing this last child. And, you know, it was my seventh child. By that time, I kind of was like, knew my body. I knew what it would do. I knew, you know.
Home birth. Weirdest
thing
ever.
And I thought, well, you know, We've done it for thousands of years,
yes, so
and it
cool.
wasn't weird, but okay, whatever.
No, it's just, it's such a different thought than what I am accustomed to.
Yeah, in the last 60 years. Yes,
yeah,
you're right.
Right.
So anyway.
What are the 60 years?
It's a different thought in the last 60 years, but prior to that, it wasn't.
Oh, I gotcha. I gotcha.
Hello. Anyway, yeah. Okay, so moving on, let me just get to the motivation.
Okay, go.
So I couldn't figure out, like, I knew my body really well. Like, I know I'm going to be in the labor for this long. I'm going to then start to push, and I'll push this many times. And then, that was
how it works.
How it worked.
Yeah.
Well, it was not working.
Okay.
And, it's because he was huge. He was 10 and a half pounds.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that.
And 6'5", which has got to be hard to get out of you.
He's 6'5" now. He wasn't then. Anyway, and I remember at this very pivotal moment, mm-hmm. there's always a pivotal moment in motivation when you think you can't do it.
Okay.
And something happens.
Okay.
And that's where I was. And I looked at my midwife and I said, I can't do this. Now that seems ludicrous because too bad.
You've got to.
Yeah. But that's what happened. She took my face in her hands and she said to me, nobody else is going to do this but you. And I was like, oh. And I snapped out of it and okay. And, you know, he was born and then we weighed him and I was like, oh my God, no wonder it was so hard. But that actually is part of the lesson too. When you get past that.
Yes.
You look back and go, oh, no wonder. That's why it was so hard to keep my motivation. That's why, because it seemed like an insurmountable obstacle, mm-hmm. which is one reason why people like us as consultants are really helpful.
Right.
Because you can hire us to help you navigate those seemingly insurmountable obstacles if you can't navigate it yourself.
And you know how to make someone cry and get there emotionally. You've done it to me.
I do not do that on purpose. That's manipulation. It's disgusting.
Yeah, No. That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But you do know how to get people to bring them to that point.
Manipulation. It sounded like you were saying I was out manipulating people, but I don't. But I do have a really unique ability to get to the center of things.
Yes, like a Tootsie Roll Pop.
Yeah,
you get to the center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So along those lines of staying motivated, being motivated is, I want to talk a little bit, if we have time, a little bit about
we do
pricing.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Because this has come up with a few people lately.
Yes.
A few business owners that I've talked with, and they're asking, how do I have the conversation when people ask me for a discount, ask me to, you know, or tell me, oh, I can't afford that. Can you lower your price?
We're not at a swap meet.
That's
our prices aren't negotiable. You know what I mean?
You said that earlier today.
It's true.
And it cracked me up.
Yeah. Well, you don't walk into Walmart, which has low prices already,
right,
and expect them to give you 89 cents off your can of green olives because you don't have enough money.
Right.
They're not going to.
Right.
This is the price.
Exactly.
And if you're looking for a discount or a bargain,
yep,
I'm not your guy.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And
it's that simple. That having that conversation is that simple.
It is.
Simple.
And we're going to dive a little deeper into that. And I want to talk about mindset before we do.
Okay.
Because you have to know that you're worth your price.
Yes.
That your value, you're bringing the value.
Yes.
I remember when I started real estate, my first mentor in real estate, who I really appreciate and taught me so many good things, but he did say one thing to me one day that I thought was scandalous. And he said, people hate us as much as they hate car salesmen. Mm-hmm. And I thought, no, they don't, because I've always held people who are in sales.
Yes.
In a place of respect and high esteem. And I guess maybe it's because I've just always been amazed by it and fascinated by it at a young age when I was first introduced to it.
Yes.
So you've got to know that the value you bring and your worth is there. And if you don't, you're going to have a problem.
Yep.
And so you don't walk into, I've never asked my attorney for a discount.
Right. You just don't even think about it.
I had surgery in March. It didn't even cross my mind to ask my surgeon for a discount.
Right.
I mean, and I'll negotiate a lot. I'll bargain like with the best of them when it's appropriate.
Right.
As you said, at the swap meet.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I love negotiating, but you don't ask, like I said, your attorney for a discount. You don't ask them. And so what do you say, right? Like, what do you say when somebody asks you for a discount? And you said something earlier about this isn't a discount.
Yeah. If you want to go to the place that has the absolute lowest prices, you should go somewhere else.
Right.
And that's true.
Right.
I will never be in my business the cheapest guy.
Right.
There are people who want to be the cheapest guy.
Yeah.
Those people, God bless them.
Yeah, build a whole business on it.
They've got to chase, though, every single cent because they're not building their margins correctly.
Right.
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 You don't want to be the low price leader in any industry.
Well, maybe you do. I mean, if you want to do volume.
Oh, maybe.
Then, I mean, there's a place for that guy.
If you want to be Five Below and sell everything in your store at $5 or less, be that.
Be the dollar store.
But don't be upset
that
people aren't coming in looking for mink coats.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can't be pissed that somebody's going somewhere else for $300 shoes when you're selling $4 fake Crocs.
Right. And part of what's important is knowing who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing your market, knowing your people. Like I remember in real estate, I'd been in real estate about a year and somebody said to me, man, you're in the wrong area of real estate. You need to be selling $1 million homes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, nope, those are not my people. I just knew it instinctively. Those are not my people. And then I did a few deals at that level. And what I realized is I was right. Those are not my people.
Okay.
For me,
okay,
the higher the price point, the more difficult the client became for me.
Okay.
And it's because I am not the type of person who is willing to hold your hand and coddle you and soften every single blow and sugarcoat everything.
No one likes a soft blow.
Listen, I'm just going to go right over that. I am more than happy, and I do believe in being a step down transformer for my client, it, you know, absorbing all of the crazy high energy and then outputting a lower energy for my client, so, and keeping all the stress behind the scenes as much as possible.
Right.
But there was something about those higher end clients that just did not mesh with me.
Interesting.
So one thing you have to know is you have to know who your people are.
Okay.
And the only way to know who your people are is to look at the data.
Okay.
And so oftentimes with clients, I swear to God, in every intake call that I have with a new client, I talk to them about tracking their data.
Yes.
Nobody's doing it. Everybody needs to. You need to know where your clients are coming from, exactly, specifically, not guessing where they're coming from.
Right.
But actually be able to look at the data and know. And one of the reasons you need to know that is because you need to know who your niche market is so you can drill down on that so you're not wasting your time.
Yes.
On the other stuff. But,
so focus on your positives, not on the negatives.
Right.
So if you've got something that's working,
yeah,
lean into it.
So this is one reason that I knew that I wasn't a discount broker.
Right.
In real estate, I'm not a discount broker in anything I've ever done.
Right.
But having those conversations, and they honestly, for me, don't come up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because people will say to me, well, and I'm just going to throw some of these scenarios out. But people might say, these are actual things that have been said to me. Well, what about a discount? And I'll say, well, what do you mean? Tell me what you mean by that. And I make them say, we want you to discount your commission.
Right.
And if they don't say those exact words, then I don't address it.
Okay.
Because if you can't have the balls to tell me exactly what you're meaning, then, oh, well, I guess it wasn't important.
I like what you actually do, though.
Go ahead.
What you do say to them is, okay, how much money are you hoping to solve?
That was the next thing I'm going to say. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So the next thing that I'll say to them, so they'll say, well, let's say they say, I want you to discount your commission. And I'll say, okay, well, how much you wanted me to discount my commission? And let's say they give me it's often a percentage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say, okay, well, let's look at the actual numbers here.
Okay.
So you have a $300,000 house, mm-hmm. and I write it right in front of them. You have a $300,000 house. I assume it's going to come under contract at $300,000. And you want me to take a 1% discount, which is $3,000. Is that right? And I might even flip it around and show them and circle the $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And they say, well, yeah, that sounds good. Okay. What if I can find that $3,000 someplace else in the contract?
I like it.
And they always say, well, what do you mean? Because clients who don't work in the industry, whatever your industry is,
right,
they don't understand the ins and outs,
right,
all the different parts of it. They, for instance, in real estate, they only look at the price of the house.
Right.
They don't know that there's so many more terms of the contract where you can save a mere $3,000. It is not hard to save $3,000 in a real estate contract. So easy. And so I'll take them through and go, well, you know, here's some other options of where we could save that $3,000. And if I can do that for you, would you be satisfied with that? Oh, well, yeah, I guess so. Great. Then the problem is solved right there. The other thing I do, though, and I think this is the reason why I don't get the question a lot.
Yes.
Is I explain to the client where all the commissions go.
Right.
And if you're in real estate, I need you to perk up right now and pay attention to what I'm about to say, because this can change your business. Absolutely. So I'll say to them as we're going through the contract,
mm-hmm.
you know, here's the, and let's, you know, not talk about percentages because I like having my license, but let's just say I'm going to charge a client 6 apples.
Okay.
To list their home.
6 apples.
6 apples. And I say, and let me explain to you, because a lot of people get confused about this. Let me explain where those 6 apples go.
Okay.
So right off the top, half of those 6 apples are going to go to the other brokerage.
Okay.
Right? And this is an important part that I want you to understand, that the money doesn't come to me, the realtor, or them, the realtor. It goes to our brokerages. It goes to the firms.
Yes.
Because it belongs to them.
Right.
Right? So half of that, 3 of the apples are going to go over to XYZ brokerage, and they're going to do whatever they do with it.
Upon closing, immediately.
Right.
Yes.
So then the three apples that stay at my brokerage, a percentage of that is going to go to my firm because I have, you know, I pay them X number of dollars to be there every year.
Yes.
A percent, a certain portion of that, maybe a half an apple, is going to go to the corporate, you know, royalties.
Right.
Right.
The mothership, as it were.
Exactly. And then I get paid.
Right.
And then when I get paid, you know, because I'm an independent contractor, 30% of it goes to taxes. And so the rest of it I get to keep and live on. So I just want to make sure that you understand that. I literally had the first time I said that to a client, and it was actually my very first listening appointment, because I took time to think about how do I want this to sound, right? Before I went in.
Sure.
Nobody taught me that conversation. I thought of it myself.
Yeah.
But I said it to them and they literally said to me, we'd be idiots to ask you to take a discount. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And they go, well, all our friends told us, well, when you talk to the realtor, ask for a discount.
Right.
But after you just explained that, it just seems like it would be awful to ask you. Yeah, exactly. So sometimes it's not even about, it's about educating them ahead of time so that they don't even ask. Because, yeah, it's stupid to ask your attorney to give you a bargain deal.
Better still, let's say you work for the city of Lakeland or the city of Kennewick.
Right.
You come in on Monday and your boss says this to you. Hey, good news. We think you're doing a great job. So you're not going to get paid for Tuesdays anymore. Tuesdays are just a non-payday.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what do you mean? I'm working on Tuesday. Right. Yeah. But we're not paying you for Tuesday because we think we should take 1/5 of your income away from you.
Right.
Would you keep that job?
Probably not.
I think salespeople should consider.
I love that.
That's exactly what's happening when somebody's asking for a discount.
So the other thing that I respond with that I wanted to share was just, you know, if they insist and we just can't seem to come to it, and this has happened once, I say, listen, it sounds like what's most important to you is saving money on the cost of the transaction with the brokerages. And so what you're looking for is a discount brokerage. So I'm going to go ahead and give you a couple of names and numbers of people that you can call who absolutely will give you a discount. But I want to give you a couple of tips before I do. Is that okay? And they always say yes. And I say, one thing is you get what you pay for. So I've shown you the 52 things that I'm going to do for you if you list with me, right? And I never leave my information, by the way, with them unless they sign documents. I say, I've shown you this. You're not going to get the same deal, but it sounds like you're okay with that. And I put it away. And I say, so just keep that in mind. You get what you pay for. The other thing is if they say they'll do it for 4 apples, they'll for sure do it for 3. So what I want you to do is really press them for even more of a discount.
Right.
Because someone who's willing to discount their value will always be willing to discount it more.
That's good.
Okay, and then I pack up my stuff and I get up and I walk out.
You know what? When you walk away, it's very rare that the person you've just spoken to is like, see ya.
Yeah, no, that one time it did happen. They called me back and signed the documents.
Right.
Because, you know, and I don't mind that people, and I do have names and numbers of people I can give them. And I know plenty of people, and I don't mind because my mindset is that there's plenty to go around.
Right.
But I'm for sure not going to discount what I do.
Right. And
I know my value.
We're not at a swap meet.
Right. Right. Yep. Yeah, and if somebody, you know, doesn't want to pay your price, they're not your client. It's okay. Let them go. Refer them to someone that they can afford.
Yes.
And replace them with someone else.
There you go. I like it. I think you've done it all, and you've said probably more than we needed to say, and I've said some things I probably shouldn't have said.
And that summarizes every podcast we've ever done.
This is fun. Motivation, what motivates you? If you're listening, write down what motivates you and take a look at it 1 week from today because I want to know if it's real. So write it down and look at it in 1 week and let's talk.
Yeah.
My name's David Austin and sitting across from me, Londa Sherwood Austin. And this has been The Session with Londa and David.